Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Tech Doctor Podcast. With me, as always, is Dr. Robert Carter. How you doing, Robert?
I'm good, Allison. How are you?
I'm doing so well. And also, we are so excited to have with us Sina Baram. How are you, Sina? Thank you so much for being here.
Doing well. Thank you for having me.
Well, and thank you for putting up with my flaky internet last week. I'm sorry we had to reschedule, but I'm glad you're here now.
Not a problem. Glad you're back online.
Yeah, me too. So we have Sina here this evening to talk with us about the much anticipated Orion TI-84 talking graphing calculator. That's a mouthful. But also to tell us about himself and a little bit more of the human aspect of what this will mean for students. So Sina, why don't you start by telling us just a little bit about you?
Sure. So thanks again for having me. And my name is Sina Baram. I'm a PhD student at North Carolina State University, where I study computer science, more specifically human-computer interaction. And so things like access to graphical information, mainly eyes-free exploration of graphical information, is what I'm really interested in and what I like to make better. And I say eyes-free because it doesn't always have to be because you're blind. It can be because you might be driving and your eyes should be on the road. And so it really opens up the field to encompass a broader audience. And, you know, that plays into universal design and all these concepts that make it not just a specific blind issue, but make it an issue that is applicable to a larger percentage of the population. So in the context of that, I've looked at graphs, bar charts, flow charts, and maps. And I was talking with APH, American Printing House, and Orbit Research about this graphing calculator, first as a beta tester. But then it turns out if you give too many suggestions as a beta tester, you either get kicked out or promoted. So the latter happened here. And so I've been really, really just having a blast with this one, actually. Doing a little bit of consulting with them on things like features, you know, what kind of things came up when I was in high school or college taking math courses, what would be great to have, and how should things work? Because a lot of what's in this calculator is some of it comes from some of the research I've done and that others have done in this field with respect to sonification of graphs, with respect to how do you read mathematics, etc.
Well, Sina, one of the things that Allison and I realized when we were talking a little earlier is that I was in public school, and I'm a totally blind person. I don't know what your visual acuity is, but I was in public school in the early 1970s, and Allison was in public school 20 plus years after that. And both of us said, you know, as people who are blind, we didn't get that much out of our math courses.
The only thing that really saved me was having a great TVI, teacher of the visually impaired, but if it hadn't have been for her, you know, explaining things to me and doing tactile graphics and brailing everything, I mean, I would have been totally lost. And even still, I only went as far as trig because of the graphs. It was too much.
Just a quick comment on that. There's a lot of folks with that same story or something similar to it. And there's two problems. One is some of the obvious obstacles and challenges that face someone doing mathematics without vision. But then there's also a problem with folks not being encouraged, blind students especially, not being encouraged to pursue math or the science field. We call it STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, because of these problems. And some of those problems are more perceived than real, I would say.
Can you elaborate just a little bit in what's your thinking when you say more perceived than real?
Especially today, we've got a lot of technologies and different approaches that can help with blind students doing mathematics. So, for example, in addition to having things like braille displays such that you can read it read the mathematics electronically, or, for example, having better access to electronic information that is better marked up. There's also other approaches, like, for example, this calculator or other audiographing techniques that can give better access to the graphical information, things that weren't available 20, 30 years ago, or even, honestly, as much as, I'd say, 10, 15 years ago. And so that helps a little bit. The other thing I would say is that the internet has played a really large part in bringing blind people, especially, I would say, together, because it's a great medium for exchanging ideas and collaborating on how to overcome certain obstacles. So I can go on a mailing list or Twitter or Facebook or what have you and exchange ideas with others about how someone's specific solution to a particular obstacle in mathematics, like how did you explain these kinds of different angles to someone who's blind, to your blind students, and then teachers can collaborate on those different kinds of forums and medium.
It's kind of like the idea of using crowdsourcing, or of the fact that it's become a global community extending throughout the world with the internet, that we can get information from some people other than just the local resources in our community. It sounds like really exactly. Is what you're saying.
Exactly.
And when that happens, then there's the potential for a lot more creativity to be put into resolving these issues.
Yeah,
there's two aspects to that, right? There's the collaboration on, okay, well, this worked for me, or you should talk to John over there because, you know, he actually figured out how to do this, this, and that. So that's one aspect, just knowledge transfer, collaboration, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and John
might be in Australia. Yeah. He's 12,000 miles away, but, that doesn't matter.
Right.
But the other aspect of it is, oh, you're having the same problem I am. Well, you know, a buddy of mine, he's an engineer. Why don't we get together? He said he was willing to work on this a little bit and come up with a solution to this problem. And so now you have this aspect of actually linking people together that have a problem with those that might be interested in solving it. And again, that's not limited by locality either, which is a really, really big thing. And because a lot of these problems can be solved, or at least can greatly be helped by software-based solutions, collaborating on a software project is pretty easy. You don't have to be in the same room to do that.
How is this calculator potentially going to help someone who is blind or visually impaired and wants to go into STEM? How is that going to make a difference for them?
So this calculator does a couple of things. Number one, it's a mainstream calculator. So this is a TI-84 plus calculator from TI. That means that when you look at instructions online or you look at a textbook that has calculator-specific instructions for how to do something, how to walk through a tutorial problem, etc., those are all available for you as well as a blind student, because you no longer have to translate that to some specific piece of assistive technology or some specific other way of doing it, whether that other way is limited or not, it's not different anymore. So that's one thing, just this idea that you're using the same tool that your colleagues are, that your peers are.
So I guess, you know, one of the beauties of that I hadn't really thought of would be potentially if a student, say, is maybe in the public school system, it's likely that his or her math teacher in that high school would be familiar with this calculator.
Exactly. Part of this might be considered a good thing or a bad thing, depending on who you ask, but some of these calculators haven't changed since those teachers were actually in school.
Okay.
And so they're quite familiar with it, and they teach it. And the advantage is now when the teacher's in front of the class and she says, oh, hit this button and this button, and let's all bring up our stats menu, well, he or she, the blind student, can do exactly that. Hit that button, bring up the stats menu, and it'll be reading to them.
That's awesome. I can really see that helping with social interaction, too, with students helping other students, getting to know each other in the process.
Exactly. So one of the things we did, for example, on the calculator, in the help mode of the calculator, is that we announced the keys, right? So the keys are announced. But the other aspect of it is that the key is announced in such a way that reflects what is visually written on it. So that's available to you as well. So if you're using the calculator, it'll say things like, it'll say a shortened form, things like second or whatnot. But in the help mode, you also have access to kind of what's written on the key, to superscript ND, that sort of thing. And that might seem, well, awfully wordy or pedantic or whatever, but it's useful because then if your sighted friend is explaining, oh, well, it's this key, you know, that you can have access to that same information, and it lends itself to that level of collaboration. And it also lets you act as a different role. You're not only as a blind student asking for advice, you can actually be giving it, right? Because you can have the, you know, that blind student who's really a whiz at the calculator, really gets into it, and then their sighted students can, their sighted peers can actually ask them for help because it's the same platform. And so they can say, oh, well, all you have to do is blah, 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 blah. And so that's something I found interesting as well.
We've seen the very same thing with the Apple products, with the iOS products. Oh, yeah. It really reduces that barrier between the person who has that specialized device mm-hmm. versus the person who has the same device that everyone else in the class is using. So you're really making a good point there.
The other aspect to collaboration is that it lessens this whole isolation thing, right? This idea that, well, I'm going to go use this different thing, or I'm going to go use this specialized piece of equipment, not only because it's different, but it's something that I'm doing differently than all of my peers, right? This way, it's the same device, it's the same material, it's the same instructions, et cetera, et cetera. And I think there's maybe an intangible but still real benefit to that when it comes to impressions of especially younger students, I would say, in terms of what they're able to do. Well, okay, I'm using the same calculator the guy who came to talk to our class is using, and he's a physicist at NASA. Or there's this woman who came from IBM, and she was showing us some stuff on how to do statistics plots. And I have that same calculator, so I can do that. And so that might lend itself a little bit more to the thoughts of, oh, and I could go be her, or have the kind of job that she has, even though I'm blind. And so I think there's a you know, that's maybe a little bit of a stretch, but there's an intangible benefit there to lessening this idea of separate or isolation and just using mainstream technology.
So there are some far-reaching implications that go well beyond just being able to get through math a little bit more easily.
Exactly. Now it does that too, and we can talk a little bit about some of the features it has and the technology, but I do think that it has some broader implications, like we've been talking about.
What kind of a background would a student need to be able to understand this calculator? In other words, I don't know enough about math these days in high schools to know whether the teachers, when they get their students, start out with calculator 101 and teach them what they need to know. Will a blind student likely be behind, maybe because of not having that great of access to math earlier on? Or what do you think about how will a person actually get to the place where they can make use of this calculator?
Well, so there's several questions and points encapsulated in that. So let me try to address them one by one. First things first, initial level, learning level or approachability. That's a question that's related to the calculator, not necessarily the fact that this one talks. So, for example, the same things apply. If, for example, a student or rather a teacher thinks that her middle school class can take advantage of this, so can the blind middle school student. But you raised a really good point. You said, well, okay, but maybe those students, once they get to high school, they've had 3 years in middle school where they've been using this calculator and they kind of know the basics. And I think there's two answers to that, right? The first one is, well, of course, that's definitely true. And the blind student might have to play a little bit of catch up. That's totally not familiar to any blind student who, you know, that's a regular thing. But that's only until those blind students who are now currently in middle school and will have access to this get to that point, right? So that's a temporary problem in terms of not having had previous access to it. But then you're raising a larger question, which is, well, what's the approachability of this just in general? I would say that it really grows with you in terms of mathematics. This is just a commentary on the calculator itself. These calculators can be useful for 3 plus 7. They can be useful for statistics. They can be useful for calculus. So we're talking everything from basic arithmetic and finance and statistics all the way up to calc or even linear algebra, because it can do matrices. So we're talking 10, 12 years of math, you know, in terms of at least how we separate math courses here in the States, all the way through graduate school. That's a really large field. That's a really large spread. And so I think that it does depend on how you're introduced to it. Just like any sighted student, you might have questions on what something means, or you might want to play with it on your own. This allows you to do that because it talks and it's accessible. But also, if you want to learn more about it, go Google it. Read the manual. So APH, for example, I know is working on a manual that's going to accompany this, but you know, in terms of an accessible manual, similar to the manual from TI. But that's only the tip of the iceberg, because there's communities. Again, we were talking about the internet, bringing people together and collaborating, mailing lists, Twitter, some people online. You can go look at a friend's webpage where he or she's described how to do something on the calculator because it helped them for their homework, and you can now do that same thing.
I guess the thing I love hearing so much about that is what you've done is flip this exclusion idea on its head, and you're totally talking inclusion. You're saying it doesn't matter if you're starting with basic math and you're going to work your way up, or if you need more advanced math. Either way, the accessible calculator is going to be there to help you accomplish the task, whatever it is, and so you can be on the relatively speaking, in the same playing field, on the same page as your sighted classmates.
Exactly. And it's not the accessible calculator that's doing that. Just because, you know, I'm an academic, I tend to be pedantic sometimes, but it's the TI calculator lets you do that because Orbit Research and APH have made this particular calculator accessible. Now that availability, that opportunity that lets you do that, that's available to a blind student.
And tell us a little bit about the accessibility. What does that mean? I understand from hearing some demos that obviously the calculator is able to speak information, and we're going to be playing a demo that you did for us at the end of the podcast so people can actually hear it. But there's more accessibility with this particular calculator than just the fact that it can speak information.
Absolutely. So there's a couple of things. Let's go over the basics. It does speak. But actually, before we even do that, let's talk about the physical device. So it's a regular TI-84 Plus graphing calculator. There's been a few hardware changes inside, just low-level electronics things to allow it to communicate with the next thing I'm going to talk about, which is, imagine, I've been describing it as a deck of cards slid on top of the calculator where the data ports usually are. And on this deck of cards-like device, there are two things. The first thing, to the left, is imagine a Braille cell configuration of keys, six keys. And so for those listeners who might not be familiar with Braille, imagine two columns of three rows each. So we have six keys. And those buttons allow you to interact with the screen reader. They allow you to go through the preferences menus, control the speech, control the speed of the speech, et cetera, et cetera. Then on the right, there's a D-pad, a direction pad, left, right, up and down, and the center key or the enter key. So with this, we have, let's see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then 6 on the left. So 11 buttons in total. And with those, you can control anything related to the additional functionality of speech and sounds and so forth of the calculator. Now in that device that's on top of the calculator, you have stereo speakers, you have a headphone jack, you have a USB port. The USB also lets you charge the battery that's inside this device. The reason for that is you don't want to steal the precious power of the calculator. You can't just power it off the calculator, because the calculator is a really, really low power processor inside. It has a really low power processor, and so it runs off of AAA batteries, and you need a little bit more oomph and a little bit more juice to run the microprocessors and speakers and things that are in the accessible unit.
So just to clarify a little bit, make sure that I got it, there is a special box the size of a deck of cards that fits on top of the calculator. But you don't just buy that box and provide your own calculator. You also need to purchase a calculator that's been slightly modified to be able to communicate with the box. Is that right?
Exactly, because there's been just a few hardware changes necessary to the calculator, to the DI-84 Plus, that's why you buy it as a whole thing from APH. From APH, at least, I should say, in North America, and then for the rest of the world through Orbit Research. Excuse me. Now, this deck of cards device has two stereo speakers. It has a headphone jack. It has USB for powering it, but you don't have to have that in because it has a battery in. And that USB port can charge that battery. It has also two stereo haptic vibrating motors. And what those are think of the things that make your cell phone buzz. And those we were excited about because we want to use those for expressing other information like in graphs or in matrices. And I can talk about a little bit about that later, but that's called haptics. And so the speech comes from this device. When your headphones aren't plugged into it, it's just using its onboard stereo speakers. And when your headphones are plugged in, it'll go to anything that you plug in. When you power the device on, this device is what's talking to you. And it reads you what's on the screen. It reads you, it has key echo, so basically it reads you what you're typing into the calculator. There's a help mode, like we were talking about before, so that you can turn that on and then hit any button on the calculator and know what it does. And I find that really, really useful because sometimes you forget. I mean, there's a lot of buttons on this calculator. And so it's great for just learning it at the beginning, but then also for, oh, what was that? And you can quickly check. In addition, there's other kinds of information that's displayed on this calculator. It's not just text. It's graphs. And so for graphs, we have sonification. So sonification refers to this idea that you use non-speech audio, not words, but sounds, to represent information. And so you'll hear that in the demo, but when there's a graph being put on the screen or multiple graphs being put on the screen, you can hear that, and that's translated to audio. In addition, there's also some initial talks about having this support Braille displays, and getting the graphs off the calculator so that you can emboss them on a Braille printer.
I thought it was fascinating that the sonification idea, when you actually listen to it and you obviously have to have some ability to hear the separation between those stereo speakers or have headphones on, but you actually hear the graph going from your left speaker to your right speaker as it goes across, and as it's actually going across, you hear a staticky sound, which represents a negative number. And when you get to the point on the graph where that number changes to a positive number, the staticky thing goes away. And I thought that was really pretty fascinating, actually.
It's incredible, yeah.
Exactly. So there's a mapping to pitch, and so the higher the tone, the higher the higher the point on the graph, the higher the Y value, and then the static sound that you hear mixed in is letting you. That's a negative value indicator. And other things we want to do, for example, is not only use for negative value indication, but well, what if you're shading under the curve, or what if you are wanting to use the vibrating motors on the device to tell you about when it's negative so that you can use the audio for other things. So there's a lot of possibilities for the future, but obviously it's the demo that you're going to hear is still a prototype. And so that's one thing to keep in mind. But the second thing is that this, because it's written in software, even though it's running on hardware, of course, a lot of the accessibility can be improved over time. And so that's another thing that I'm excited about is, well, okay, this is version 1, but what's going to be in version 1.5 or 2.0? And that can be updatable. And I really like that aspect of it.
Yeah, and with the possibility of working somehow with a Braille display and also using more of the vibrating motor aspect of it, you can meet more needs of people who are deafblind as well.
Exactly. That's another population that is oftentimes overlooked in STEM, is deafblind. And so I think there's a lot of interesting possibilities there, especially with Braille and then with haptics. That's kind of exciting. That really opens the door to doing some interesting things with respect to math education for deafblind.
This calculator has been around, as you said, for a long, long time. why has it taken so long for something like this to happen?
There's been some software attempts to do things like this, but not necessarily in the hardware. Some of it has to do with the hardware being available, the kinds of hardware that's used in this being available. And then the other aspect of it is just the right people being in the right place, as is often the case with these things. It's not necessarily that this couldn't have been done 5 years ago or earlier, but that the right people weren't in the right place. I know for myself, I don't want to speak for APH or Orbit on this one, but I remember that Ken Perry over at American Printing House for the Blind was really excited about this project, and I know he did a lot to push it forward. And then the guys over at Orbit were really interested in it, really excited about it. They're the same folks who did the iBill, the money identifier, the handheld money identifier.
Yes.
And so they've had some experience in this space and said, well, you know, we can do that. That sounds like a nice project. And they've definitely delivered as far as I'm concerned.
So this is a joint project between Orbit and APH. How are the responsibilities divided up? In other words, who's doing what at this point?
Some of that I'll have you ask them, just because I don't want to tell you wrong. I can also find out for you. But from what I've observed and, you know, where I've been a part of it, there's been a really strong collaboration. So a lot of the engineering, the actual implementation, but even the design as well has been done by Orbit. And then, of course, APH has the experience and the knowledge about math education, not to mention the awareness of what the user requirements are and the initial idea in the first place, and the ability to collaborate with folks like TI, you know, the people who make this calculator, because there's some collaboration there as well. So it's definitely a all hands on board, full court press sort of project. And I think there's a lot of give and take from various corners.
And what has your role been as a beta tester, you said, and gradually you've gotten more involved in this project. What do you do with it?
So some of this applies to my research. So I get to hop on calls with folks like Venkatesh, who's the amazing person over at Orbit, who does a lot of the management of the engineering and the analysis of all of these things as the prototype is moving forward, and talk about things like, well, okay, how can we, what kind of algorithm should we use for personifying this graph, and, you know, what's best according to the literature, or what are the different approaches? So that's the theoretical academic side of it. There's also things like, so let's go over these 27 bugs. And so there's all sorts of hands-on, but then also some of the theory that is really great, because for me, I love it because it's wonderful to see it in a paper or to talk about it in the lab or things of that nature. It's even better to see it implemented the right way on a handheld device that you can then hand to a user that doesn't know the academics and doesn't know the reasoning for things and is only interested in, will it help me succeed in math class?
Clearly, this is one of those projects that tremendous research and development is going on in the background. Of course, the end user doesn't have to even know about that or be aware of it. But man, there are a lot of good brains working on this thing, it sounds like.
There's, I've had a lot of fun with the folks on this project. It's been, I mean, it's A, been an honor, and B, been an absolute blast. But also, I think that if they do their job correctly, you know, and this is true about any product, I think, if you really do your job correctly, it shouldn't be apparent just how painful it was to get there.
Right.
And so the end goal should be beautiful and responsive and correct and just work. But all of that complexity should be hidden from the user, but it should be there working on behalf of the user. And so to me, I'm hoping that I can help a little bit with that, and Venkatesh and his team at Orbit Research have done a great job with that, and Ken Perry and the guys over at American Printing House for the Blind have done a really good job with that. So that's sort of the idea there. It's things like, well, okay, we've got these graphs and we can sonify them. When I was at the CSUN conference a couple of weeks ago, we had actually a Braille printer in one of the rooms, and so we copied the graphs off of, I think Ken did this actually, he copied the graphs off of the calculator, ran them to the embosser, and printed out some polar plots, and printed out some graphs, and those were actually available at the booth for people to come by and feel, and they said, well, where did these come from? It's like, well, it came from this calculator. Here, you can hold it. You can play with it. It talks. And by the way, if you take the graphs off of it, you can feel them. So I think there's a lot of interesting opportunities there. And there's a lot of R&D, like you said. But if you do it right, it's all hidden away in the background, and it just works. But there's a lot to discover once you get your hands on this thing.
Sure sounds like this is a big step, though. This seems like one of those breakthrough kinds of products that may well make a huge difference for how students ultimately spend their lives.
Yeah.
I think so. I think there's opportunities to encourage students to get into science and math and technology, and so that's great. I think it will make doing those things, the implementation of them, easier. So that too is great. And then there's other implications too, such as, for example, not having to rely on someone else to do a particular thing, and that's really big as well, because that lack of reliance lets you be more independent in doing your studies, and there's some confidence and other things that are associated with that. And hopefully that means that more blind and low vision students will choose STEM as a career path, which is actually really great from a just employment point of view. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities, there's a great need, a demand in the whole world right now for people who know science and technology, engineering, mathematics. That's really the wave of the future, and the wave of the now, really, not even the future. And so if you're able to converse about these things and know about these things and work in these fields, then that's a huge leg up in terms of employment and in terms of success.
And it seems to me the more people we have involved, the more blind people we have involved in the STEM field, the more that we as a community can benefit as well from new discoveries made by those people.
Exactly. Not to mention they will be bringing a set of problems to the field that can be solved by them and by colleagues they meet and so on and so forth. So there's sort of this emergent effect that happens.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there will always be a new version coming along, and as you said, it's software that can be revised and added to and built upon over time, but and not trying to find out necessarily a specific date, but how far along in the prototype do you feel like you are in terms of getting to a place where you have a product, at least a first version of a product that's ready for people to use?
I think closer rather than further away. And another thing I can say is that I believe the dates that APH has had on a lot of the press releases and Orbit's been talking about is this school year. And so I think that's a good way to phrase it, is this school year for maybe some initial releases and availability. Can't get too much more specific than that, but I can tell you the level of progress or the pace of progress has been somewhat exponential. And so from what I played with in, let's see here, maybe December, I think it was, end of December, beginning of January, to the end of January to the beginning of February, it's just been leaps and bounds. And so that's been a really big, that's been a really encouraging thing to be a part of, because there's progress being made all the time. There's things being fixed all the time. There's new things being discovered, which is of course part of the whole prototype and development process. And it's just neat to see it come together, I think, is where I'm going with that. And that's always fun to be a part of.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
APH and Orbit have been really great. When I've been working with them, I've had some collaborations and work with other companies, and there's always the NDAs and all of these other things that just are part of doing this kind of work. But as far as these guys go, they say, look, you can talk about anything you want, anything at all. Show everybody, show the world, let everybody play with it. There's none of those, oh, you can't touch it or so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But just availability and pricing are the things that they're still working on, and they want to get it right, and they want to make sure it's available to a large percentage of people. And so I want to be really respectful of that, just because everything else has been so just full, totally open, go for it. And that's been a lot of fun to see, actually.
Sure, but your point's a good one, that sounds like you're you can say you're more than halfway there, and that's exciting.
Right. Oh yeah, definitely. I think it's safe to say that we're more than halfway there for sure.
We're going to, as we've said a couple times, when we stop our conversation here, actually play a very nice demonstration that you did for us of the layout of the calculator and actually the sounds that it makes and what it's like to plot some graphs and to have that information heard back. And so obviously want people to stay tuned for that in a few minutes. But is there anything else that you feel like you want to be sure and mention or touch on before we get to the point of heading toward the demo?
I would say that there's a couple of ways of learning more about this. So, and all of this information, I believe, will be in the show notes. And so there's a mailing list where it's an announce-only mailing list. So there won't be a lot of messages on there. We all have more email than we know what to do with these days. But if you want to get an email as it gets closer there's more information to tell, then APH has a mailing list for that. That'll be in the show notes. In addition, please feel free to contact me personally, just in case if you have any questions or you want to talk about math accessibility or talk about if you're, let's say, blind or low vision or interested in going into computer science, I'm happy to talk to you. I can be reached on Twitter. It's my first name and my last name, at Sina Baram, and I'll spell that. It's at SinaBaham. And you can find a ton of other ways to contact me by just going to my website, which is sinabaram.com, SinaBaham.com. And there's a contact link there, and I'm on everything you might think, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Skype, so on and so forth. And please reach out. I'm really happy to hear from folks that are interested in this space and also might have needs or might have functional requirements that APH and Orbit haven't heard of yet. And so that's something that's always fun and always interesting, because someone might email in and say, well, okay, this is really great for blind people, but I have this, this, and this, and so how will it work with that? And that's, those kinds of discussions only make the product better, and they're really great to have, so I encourage that.
Well, that is wonderful, and thank you so much, Sina, for being here this evening. We really appreciate you taking the time to come on and chat with us. We've enjoyed it. And thank you all for listening. And please do stick around for the demo. It's awesome. And it is in full stereo. So if you have headphones, I encourage you to wear them to get the full awesome effect of what this calculator can do. And please, as always, do feel free to get in touch with us directly. You can do that by sending an email to techdoctor@dr-carter.com. That's techdoctor@drcarter.com. I'm Allison Hartley.
And I'm Robert Carter, the tech doctor. And we're going to say so long, but don't push the stop button just yet. Stay around and listen to this excellent calculator demo. Thank
you.
Don't touch that dial, folks. Yeah, don't touch that dial. Until next time, so long, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
All right. Let's turn the power on the calculator.
Power on.
And it also vibrates when we turn it on. There are two stereo haptic vibrating motors in the device, as well as two stereo speakers. And we have the buttons at the top, as we discussed earlier. So now let's hit the second key three times to enter a key describe mode.
Second on. Press this key three times again to exit help mode.
Okay. So now what we can do is press any key on the calculator and hear what it does. So let's do that.
Y equals rings of graphing equation entry. Window variables. Displays graph viewing window. Zoom variables. Allows you to adjust the viewing window of the graph quickly. Trace. Displays graph screen in trace cursor mode. Graph. Displays graph screen in free cursor mode.
And that's the first five rows, first five keys on the top row of the calculator. Of course, there's a variety of other buttons on this calculator. For example,
comma symbol, open pin, close pin, sine, cosine, tangent,
and
press key then enter value.
And there's descriptions on those keys as well. So let's leave help mode here by hitting second three times.
Two superscript ND activates second function mode. Help off.
And I let it speak that just so we can hear the description of the second key as well. Let's go into Y equals, which is the top left hand button on the first row, so we can graph something.
Y equals X. Y equals.
And there we go.
Y1 equals equation disabled.
And let's go down to our other equations. So this is Y1 equals, there's Y2, Y3, Y4, etc. You can graph multiple equations.
Y2 equals X equation disabled.
That one's disabled.
Y3 equals tangent open pin X closed pin equation enabled graph stylistic line.
Okay, so it told us that the graph style is thick line. It told us that it's enabled, and obviously what it is, y equals tangent of x. So if we wanted to graph this, we could hit trace. I'm going to hit zoom just because I want to graph it at a certain resolution at level 6.
Zoom variables. Zoom menu 6.
And this is it calculating, and then we're going to hear the graph. That was interesting, but a little fast. So why don't we go into the options in the talking portion of the calculator and actually set the playback tone duration to be a little bit longer than what it is right now.
Enter preferences menu. Graph navigation beep length. Playback tone duration 2 seconds, 3 seconds, 4 seconds, 5 seconds, 6 seconds, 6 seconds selected. Exit preferences menu.
There we go. And then we can hit zoom like we did
zoom
before.
Menu. Zoom menu. Zoom box. 6.
Calculating, and then we'll hear it again. All right, so that was a little bit more informative. The sh was the negative value indicator, and the panning from left to right lets us know where we are on the graph from left to right as the equation is played back. So if we just played it in both ears, that would be one thing, but by panning it from left to right, you're able to build up a little bit of a nicer mental model of what's going on. Now, that was a little bit of a complicated equation, y equals tangent of x. Let's do something a little bit more straightforward, like y equals x, which is just a line going from the bottom left to the top right, to hear what that sounds like.
Y1 equals y2, y3 equals tangent open cursor moved from equation to equal, equation disabled.
So I disabled y3, and I'm going to go up here.
Y2 equals x equation disabled. Cursor moved from equal, cursor moved from equation enabled.
There we go. And I'm going to hit zoom.
Zoom variables. 6.
And here's y equals x. Now, some of those high frequencies we need to work on a little bit because they're a bit too high, but this is still a prototype. But you heard it was negative for the first half of the graph. It crossed the origin and then became positive and continued going up with a slope of 1. So that's an example of the graphing as it is right now. The calculator can do other things as well, including matrices and some statistics functions, but that's the sonification and then some of the keys, like, for example, the help mode that we have available right now in the prototype.